The Boston Celtics fell short in the Eastern Conference Finals for the third time in 4 years. What's next for the Celtics? My man Jay King, Celtics beat reporter for The Athletic, is going to join me on the Hoops High podcast momentarily to talk about those potential moves that could be coming for the Celtics this offseason. Jay, it's great to have you on the pod, my man. I always enjoy talking with you in the media room, so we might as well record it on a pod. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing well, man. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure, man. Anytime. Your Celtics, they're out. They had a decent postseason run, certainly. A lot of different things happened. As always, is Brad Stevens overrated? Is he underrated? There was plenty of Kemba Walker Twitter slander out and about. And Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown looking like franchise corner pieces. And then they've got some key moves to make in the offseason. We're going to get all break it all down. But I think the first thing I wanted to ask you, being there every day, did you think that the Celtics met their expectations this season, given that this is now the third time in 4 years that they've been bounced in the Eastern Conference Finals with this team that they had and then bringing Kemba Walker into the fold?
Yeah, I think it was definitely a disappointing end. And to lose to the Miami Heat and the number five seed, and then to do it the way that the Celtics did, which was blowing leads in the fourth quarter of every game they lost in the Eastern Conference Finals. That's tough to go out that way. But I think when you take a step back from that, this was a really productive year for Boston. I think after Kyrie Irving left, after Al Horford left, there were no more assurances that the Celtics had enough talent to compete for championships, to compete to get out of the Eastern Conference. I think they answered some of those questions. I think Jason Tatum's rise is really, really important. I think Jaylen Brown taking a leap forward too is really, really important. Obviously, Kemba Walker fit in, though he didn't have the playoffs he would have wanted. I think a lot went right for Boston this year. And now with, you know, Tatum 22, Jaylen Brown 23, I think they have a window to compete for a while. They need to upgrade some parts of their roster. I think they need to continue getting more mature, especially at the end of games. Like the fourth quarters against Miami were just bad. They just got smoked basically every fourth quarter in that series. So they need to figure that stuff out. But as far as answering the question of whether they have enough talent, I think the Tatum climb goes a long way toward answering that.
You know, you brought up Kyrie and you also brought up Al Horford. A couple of thoughts that came to my mind initially. Al Horford, to me, was on the decline looking back last season. He goes into the Sixers. It was a horrible fit. It was like trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. Yeah. It just didn't work. And I don't think necessarily losing him, I mean, it hurt in some regards, maybe in the locker room and defensive communication, but him as a player, I think we saw slowly he was starting to take a dive in his play, and we saw that this year in Philly. When you talked about Kyrie, the thing with Kyrie as a talent compared to Kemba Walker, Kyrie is a better talent individually than Kemba Walker. I don't think anybody's questioning that, but the fit with Kemba, and the attitude that he seemed to bring seemed to work well with that core. I think for Kyrie, it's going to be interesting this year in Brooklyn when he gets a healthy Kevin Durant back. Now there are no more excuses. You change a coach. You bring in Steve Nash, a Hall of Fame point guard, and they're going to have to figure that dynamic out. But I'm guaranteeing you, and I'm sure you know, the Celtics fans are probably chomping at the bit to see Kyrie and the Nets fail, given the way that he exited Boston. But maybe we'll touch back on that later when we talk about the Celtics comparatively to the East. But, you know, you're talking about those expectations. You didn't seem like you felt that they necessarily had enough to definitely come out of the East for sure. I thought the East was certainly wide open going into the year.
Yeah.
The one thing I look at with that Celtics team is Gordon Hayward makes it a little bit tough because when they have Tatum at the four and you got Tice at the five, to me, you're a little too small and you're giving up a lot of rebounding size there. And Gordon Hayward, I felt at the time when they first got him, was almost like an embarrassment of riches. I didn't know if they really needed him as much as maybe another front court guy at the time. But, you know, lo and behold, here we are. We'll have to see his option next year. But you touched on Tatum's rise and Jaylen Brown, too. You know, you shared our poll on Hoops Hype, and I had written about this when in talking with execs and some scouts as far as guys they would build around under 25. Tatum came in number two behind Luka Doncic, which I don't think there's anything wrong with that, certainly. And Jaylen Brown also made it number 11 overall. When you look at those two, are those two the franchise cornerstones that Boston needs to eventually win a title?
Yeah, and I think, I mean, to win a title in the NBA, you normally need at least one top five or top 10 player. And then, what, two other all-stars? That's how it normally goes. Or another top five or top 10 player like the Lakers are built with role players around those guys. I think for the Celtics, like Tatum, he just averaged 25, 10, and 5 throughout the playoff run. If you look at the amount of the list of guys who have done that in a single postseason, it's like 75% former MVPs. And I'm not saying Tatum is going to be that, but the strides that he took from really an inefficient second season in 2018-19, where he settled for a lot of tough mid-range jumpers, he took some criticism and some justified criticism for his shot selection, to go from that to becoming one of the best pull-up three-point shooters in the NBA, one of the best off-the-dribble three-point shooters in the NBA, and to be 6'8", and to be able to run pick and rolls, and to be a plus defender on top of all that. And then the playoffs, like, all of a sudden, he just started setting, like, postseason career highs and assists. Seemed like every other game. So he advanced in a lot of ways in his third year, and he showed signs for his age that he still has a lot of growth left. So I think that's the most important thing for the Celtics from this past season. And to have Jaylen Brown next to him in a league where two-way wings are really tough to come by, those guys are – it's special to have a duo like that. And I think when you look around at all the wing duos in the league, you look at Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, you look at – I don't even know what else would be up there, but Tatum and Brown are close to the top of that, and they're young and still growing, and so yeah, those two guys are definitely franchise building blocks. I think moving forward, it's going to be interesting to see how they continue to evolve next to Kemba Walker, because obviously Kemba is a dynamic offensive player, a really, really tough guy to guard, and he needs to be involved offensively, very involved offensively. But I mean, Danny Ainge in his press conference after the season said he thinks Jaylen Brown is ready for more opportunities. Obviously Tatum, as he continues to grow, evolve, he'll probably get more opportunities. So I'm interested to see how the hierarchy shifts. I don't think Kemba will make a stink regardless of how it shifts. Like he is all about empowering those two guys, and he wants them to succeed, and he just wants to win. He doesn't care what it looks like. He spent enough time in Charlotte to realize what happens when he's by himself on an island, and he wants the best for those guys. But yeah, those guys are definitely the franchise building blocks. I expect them to be in Boston for a long, long time, and building a championship roster around them is going to be the key for Danny Ainge moving forward.
Kemba took a lot of slander on Twitter from people during this playoff run. Guy who averaged 20 and 5 in the regular season. Then in the playoffs, he still averaged overall 25 and 4, 20 points, 5 assists, 4 boards. Shot about 44%, 31% from downtown, a little bit down. When you look at the numbers, they weren't bad on paper. My thing with Kemba is, to your point, I think they got to balance out those three guys. having Kemba's ability to create off the dribble and the step back jumper in the mid-range game, which we saw a few times for Boston, I still think that's a lethal weapon that they need.
Yep.
You touched on his time in Charlotte. He specifically came to Boston to try to win. You know, it's one of the reasons why he didn't end up with the New York Knicks, his hometown team growing up. And I agree with you there. Kemba's going to do everything he can to win. The one thing that's a little different about Kemba, he's not a pure point guard. He's definitely more of a scoring point guard first. And I remember in talking with Tatum before his draft, you know, some of the goals he mentioned was to try to win an MVP and win a scoring title. I think he certainly has all the tools to do that. And physically, he's getting into shape where he can put those expectations on his shoulders and carry them. With Kemba Walker, when he was getting, you know, roasted like a Thanksgiving turkey on Twitter, I mean, did you think it was justified?
I thought some of his playoff run was just, he clearly wasn't himself physically.
Mm-hmm.
And the knee issues, which started before the NBA hiatus, didn't go away while the NBA was shut down for 4 months. When he got back to training camp for the NBA restart, the Celtics kept him out of practices during the seeding games. They limited his minutes. And so they made it clear that they were worried about that knee. That was a concern for them. I think part of it was just physically he didn't hold up. I think if you look earlier in the playoffs through maybe two games of the Toronto series, he was great. He was fantastic. He mm-hmm. was efficient. He was high scoring. He was making so many plays for the Celtics. And then you look later on in the Miami series, it's like, Kemba can't get by Jay Crowder? Like something's wrong. And I don't know how big an issue that is for the Celtics long term, that he couldn't get his knee right. Danny Ainge said they don't expect him to undergo offseason surgery. He needs to really build up that knee strength. He needs to be able to survive a full season and be sharper in the playoffs, because he was pretty good, but his production diminished further in the playoffs. And I think part of it was that Toronto, you know, they played some box and one on him. Miami played a lot of zone. They took away the types of looks that he's used to getting and gave him looks that, I mean, when's the last time a guy faced that much zone in a playoff run? Probably never. Like, zones are just becoming increasingly prevalent in the NBA. And I think that was part of it too. But physically, he needs to get better. That knee is something he needs to figure out. It's probably tough to rehab an injury while the league is on hiatus. You're not in the practice facility like you normally would be. You're not with the training staff like you normally would be. There were definitely some negatives to him for being away for 4 months when he could have been, you know, doing more to rehab the knee. But when you're gone for 4 months and you come back and it's still not gone, that's a problem. And so they need to address that. And make sure that he's got that speed, that burst, that really makes him special.
Well, you know, in fairness, it's not like the guys had to build up some playoff endurance playing for the Hornets for a lot of so
that's the other thing too. Like, he's never had the pressure of a deep playoff run and the toll it takes on your body. And obviously, they weren't traveling in the bubble, but when you're playing, you know, close to 40 minutes every night in playoff intensity, that's tough on the body in the first place. And when you have a damaged knee, however bad that knee was, he wouldn't admit it was a problem, but that's just because he's Kemba Walker and he didn't want to make an excuse. It was clear that was a problem.
Listen, I don't know how you guys do it up in Boston, but in New York, you don't complain about injuries. You don't make foul calls in the park. Kemba Walker, here's the Twitter slander. It'll motivate him. He'll come back next year, you know. Pride of the Bronx. Kemba Walker's not here.
That was a classic move by him to wear a Yankees hat to his Zoom post-game press conference after the Celtics got eliminated. I appreciated that.
Yeah, look, Kemba, you bring up the Yankee hat. A lot of Knicks fans obviously thought that they would have a shot to get him. And yeah, I remember talking with him about it as he went into his last year with Charlotte. It just, yeah, it was a possibility, but they weren't ready. You know, he wanted to win. That's why, like we touched on earlier, he came to Boston. I think, I think he's a more than capable, depending on where you rank Jaylen Brown and him, second or third option kind of guy. I think you can absolutely win with that. You know, to me, it's more about the front court for Boston. And like I said to you earlier, you know, playing Tatum at the four sometimes, right now you're giving up some rebounding there. We saw Daniel Theis, I think, is underrated. This is a guy that when I watch him play, he does things that I don't know if they show up in the box score, like maybe setting a screen assist. You know, you have to go into the advanced stats. You know, I'm sure our boy Jared Weiss will, you know, pull up that and those advanced stats. But, you know, he makes winning plays. He hustles. He throws. He has a little bit of the 90s game where he'll throw some elbows with guys in the post. I love that, even though he's, well, what is he? He's got to be about like 6'8", maybe 6'9".
He's 6'8", and a thin 6'8", too. It's not like he's a bulky PJ Tucker type.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, Robert Williams is a guy that I think for the Celtics next year really has to take a leap as more of a traditional type of big man. Guy that could shot, block shots and rim roll on offense. He's an interesting piece I think they need. But, and, you know, Canner, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get rebounding and post scoring, but not exactly an intimidating defender, certainly. So I always felt like, whether it's in free agency or in a trade at some point next season, they got to add another shot blocker and or maybe a guy that's a more of a traditional four. I'm not saying, I'm just going to throw a name. I am not saying this is going to happen. Aggregators do not say that I reported this. I'm just throwing it out there. Someone like this. Let me know what you think. Someone like a Paul Millsap, a guy that's a rugged guy, can rebound, pick and pop. And has veteran experience. Someone along those lines, I think, if Boston was able to add, would help their front court. What do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, someone in that mold would work. I think when you look at their roster, the two biggest concerns for them are, number one, a backup center. Like you said, Daniel Theis did a really good job. Daniel Theis had a solid season for the Celtics. They were typically great when he was on the court. Behind him, they never really knew what they were getting every night. I think the development of Robert Williams and Grant Williams will be key. And I don't know what those guys are going to look like in the future. You know, can Grant Williams be an undersized center like PJ Tucker, who can guard 1 through 5, who can switch, who can do enough offensively to make his defensive talent worth having on the court for long stretches at a time? I think there's a possibility. I think he showed some signs of that. I think even in the Eastern Conference Finals, some of the Celtics' best defensive stretches were with Grant Williams on the court at center. Robert Williams, the questions for him, can he just stay focused and stay detail-oriented to long enough to make the Celtics coaches trust him? He couldn't do it enough, even with Enes Kanter, an imperfect option against the Heat. The Celtics coaches went away from Robert Williams in he still showed some signs of progress in year two, like obvious signs of progress. And then the other question for the Celtics roster is, can they add some more shooting on the bench? And I know that wouldn't have been as big an issue if Gordon Hayward had stayed healthy in the playoffs and if Kemba Walker had been at 100% in the playoffs. But the Celtics shooting dried up really quickly when they hit the bench. And I think that was a big issue for them all season. They finished 13th. In three-pointers made this season. They finished 13th in three-point attempts this season. That's not good enough. And they still had the fourth-ranked offense. I think if you add more bench shooting, the offense can be special. And I think, you know, Tatum's going to keep rising. Jaylen Brown isn't going to get any worse. Kemba Walker's still going to be dynamite. So if you can surround those guys with more effective options, and Brad Wanamaker had a good season, but he's not really a threat that defenses need to key in on. Grant Williams, another guy, like he can be a really good defender, but defenses don't care about leaving him open at all. Shemi Ojeleye, he's gotten much better as a shooter. but he's still just a pretty average shooter and doesn't do much else offensively. Romeo Langford, what do the Celtics have in him? I'm not really sure after an injury-riddled rookie season. But all those guys, like, there's no real volume shooting, impressive shooting, knockdown guy out of that bunch. If they can get somebody like that, I think it would go a long way, especially if that guy had size. Like a stretch four on that roster would be a really, really good fit.
I hear you. And, you know, you touched about the guys on the bench. I almost wonder next season now, what's going to be Gordon Hayward's role? Do you make him remain in the starting lineup, you know, put him at the three and have Tatum at the four, Brown at the two, Kemba and Tice? Or, you know, if a guy like Gordon Hayward theoretically went to the bench and was their sixth man, then on talent alone, if he's fully healthy, that's a guy that you would think could compete for a sixth man of the year award. I know that's not at all what Boston signed him to that hefty contract for, but, you know, when you're trying to win a championship, sometimes you got to think a little bit differently outside of the box. What do you see for Gordon next season? And by the way, I think you and I can safely say a $34 million player option for Gordon Hayward is getting picked up for next season.
Yeah, I think when you talk to people, the assumption is that he will pick that up. Obviously, with the way the salary cap uncertainty, there weren't going to be many teams with cap space to begin with this summer. A lot of them are younger teams that Hayward probably wouldn't be a great fit on. So I think he picks up the player option. I think that's safe. I think with the discussion around him mostly relates to how expensive this Celtics roster is going to get moving forward. And, I mean, Jason Tatum is due for an extension this summer. He'll end up being a max guy. Jaylen Brown is pretty close to a max guy. Kemba Walker is a veteran max guy, so his salary is even higher than the other two. And so they've got a lot of money committed for years in advance. Now, Hayward, I mean, he was really efficient for them. I think it kind of gets lost because he got hurt in the playoffs. He came back when he played against the Heat. He clearly wasn't himself physically. He had, you know, a rough three games against Miami, I guess it was four games, but he clearly wasn't himself. Do the Celtics want to pay him into the future to be a fourth option, to be a high-powered, high-efficiency fourth option to give them more versatility? I think that's probably the easiest way to keep their talent cupboard stocked, but I also think the Celtics owners could look at that and say, look, we've already got so much money committed in this core. The luxury tax payments on this roster are going to be so steep if they keep everybody together. So I'm interested to see what they do with Hayward. If he does opt in, as we assume, do the Celtics look to trade him? I don't think they can get equal value back, but like, do they let him go after the final year of his contract? Does he want to stay in Boston? I know he had big dreams for his career, and he didn't sign in Boston to be a fourth option. And I know in a lot of ways it's a really good situation for him. That they're going to compete in the Eastern Conference for years. He has been well paid for, you know, not much production, although that's not his fault at all. And it's really, really unfortunate what happened to him. But, like, is that what he wants? Does he want to be a guy who's clearly number four in the pecking order? I don't know. And I'm not speaking for him. I'm not, like, I have no inside information about what Gordon Hayward wants to do, where he wants to go. But I do think the discussion is like wondering if he wants to stay in Boston. I think that's fair.
Well, a couple of things on Hayward. Number one, I think a lot of people would be the 15th man on a team if they're getting $34 million. But I know the competitive side of Gordon. He always wanted to reunite with Brad Stevens. It happened. Things have not gone to fruition as they both anticipated it would when they joined forces, and back when they had Kyrie also. Now, the one thing I would say too about Hayward is, I think certainly he opts in. I don't see him, because then you would have to get like $25 million a year or something like that to, for multiple years to get an extension to make it kind of even worth it. You know, coming off not exactly a great year, I think he's going to try to bet on himself. Take the player option, get as much money as you can, and then go from there. At that point, if you're Boston, you've got him on the books for one more year. I think you certainly, personally, I would, first of all, Danny Ainge is always surveying the market. Danny Ainge is not going to sit back and rest on any laurels. He's going to look to uncover every stone. Now, with that in mind, if you're moving a guy like Gordon Hayward, you're moving him to a team probably for a guy that's got multiple years on his deal, that a team is trying to get off the contract, and Hayward comes off the books in a year financially. I think that's your best bet in order to do that. Also, keep in mind that the Celtics have four picks in this draft, considered a weak one overall, but you've got the Memphis first-round pick, you have their own first-round pick, you have Milwaukee's first-round pick at the very end of the first round, and they have Brooklyn's second-round pick. Danny Ainge has got plenty of chips to tinker with here and work the phones on trade talks. I certainly think they're going to try to move those draft picks. One, it's, as I mentioned, the weak draft. Two, 3 out of 4 years, you're in the Eastern Conference Finals. You can't get over that hump. You need to do something now with your young core to try to get past that point. I think now is definitely the time. Kemba Walker is not old, but he's not getting any younger. He's in the prime of his career. I think you're going to want to maximize that. And so that kind of transitioned me to a favorite topic of Celtics Twitter, Brad Stevens. Now, Brad got an extension, and I think it was certainly deserved. But my question for you is Brad Stevens overrated? Is he underrated? Is he appropriately rated? What do you think? Because it seems to me anytime, whether it's Celtics Twitter or in the media, the Brad Stevens takes are all over the place.
I think a lot of the takes now are backlash to when he was seen as the Wonder Boy, right? And when he had all that glowing praise over his first few years in the league. And I think some of the criticism that he gets now is just backlash to all that. I think the 2018-19 season, he'd be the first one to tell you he did not maximize that group. It was a really, really tough job that year. I'm not sure really anyone could have done it, but they had, I mean, just every single dynamic that was tough, they had basically. Like Gordon Hayward was coming back from injury. He wasn't himself. They had to play him because they knew they were going to need him, and they knew they were going to need to get him in good shape, but it took him a long time to start producing, and they were still playing him. That pissed off young guys, some of whom starred in the Eastern Conference Finals the year before, and they had stepped into starring roles because Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward were hurt. So it's really rare that you get like young players who have succeeded in the playoffs, then they have to take a step back because all-star teammates are coming back from injury. And I think there were like probably 8 or 9 guys on that team who thought they were the second or third best player on that team.
Terry Rozier. Excuse me. Oh, sorry.
And those guys, they played like a group of guys who all thought they were the second or third best player on the team, mm-hmm. and all had different individual motivations beyond winning as a team. And then, I mean, obviously Kyrie got unhappy with things and didn't always handle that well. It was a mess. And so I think he'd be the first one to tell you he did not have a hold of that locker room. He did not do the job that he anticipated that year. I think this year he was great. I think for the most part, when you look at what they had, he facilitated Tatum and Brown their rise. He helped Kemba Walker, who was a free agent pickup, come in seamlessly and be great from day one. He took a bench that was really thin, and in a year when the Celtics had a lot of injuries, they rarely had their best players all healthy at the same time. They won, they were the third seed in the East. I think they won at a 55 win pace if the schedule had been 82 games like in a regular season. So they had a really, really good season. I think, you know, then without Gordon Hayward, one of their best players, they beat the number two seed in the Toronto Raptors. So, I think there are ways to criticize Stevens. The Eastern Conference Finals against Miami did not go well. I think some people would say that Spoelstra got the best of him with the zone, stuff like that. It took the Celtics a while to figure out the zone. But, like, some of it was just they were throwing dumbass, lazy turnovers against the zone. And some of it was, I think guys got worn out. Well, you can put that on Stevens, right? Because Jason Tatum led the playoffs in minutes, and Jaylen Brown was also in the top five, and Kemba Walker and Marcus Smart, I believe, were both in the top 20. But what other choice did he have? He had a roster that really wasn't deep. He had Gordon Hayward injured for all of the second round, most of the first round, and part of the Eastern Conference Finals. And so even the question of, like, did Brad Stevens contribute to the fatigue? Like, yeah, he probably did, but also I'm not sure he had much choice. So
I don't know if we're calling him Tom Thibodeau, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and he's never been a guy to put huge minute loads on his players. Obviously, he felt like he didn't have much of a choice this year. I don't blame him. So I think it's always so tough to judge coaches for me, because we don't see any of the coaching that they do. We only see the results, really, and what they tell us in press conferences. I think Brad Stevens is a really good coach. I think the Celtics are fortunate to have him. Where he stands on the list of best coaches, I'm not sure. But, I mean, he's been in the Eastern Conference Finals 3 out of the past 4 years with a lot of different rosters, a lot of franchise overhaul. And, you know, they had the number 4 ranked defense this year with a front court rotation that everyone thought was a question mark coming into the season. Daniel Tice was third string center before. Enes Kanter has had defensive limitations his whole career. Robert Williams and Grant Williams had never really played real NBA minutes before. They were the 4th ranked defense with that group and a really young, unproven bench. So he had a good season. I know there's criticism when they go out, and especially when you lose to a 5 seed, but the Heat aren't a regular 5 seed. And Spoelstra, obviously, he's a great, great coach.
You know, first of all, you got to look at the dynamics of the bubble. You don't have a true home court advantage. It certainly changes the things, and it's about a mental toughness and fortitude that I certainly think Jimmy Butler has. I think the Celtics, some of their younger guys, grew in that department from this experience, or will grow from that experience, this playoff run, and take it into next season. When I think of Brad Stevens, I think of a good out of timeout guy that can draw up plays. You know, you touched on that season, you know, with Kyrie in the locker room and other people who thought that they were the second best player on their team. And it was an embarrassment of riches more so, but it was hard to juggle. One thing, and this goes for Brad Stevens and this goes for Kyrie Irving, both in Boston and in Brooklyn, in my opinion, players are the ones who dictate the culture. A coach can try to do that, but ultimately, the coach isn't the one breaking off plays on the court. And I think Brad is an X's and O's guy. I think he's pretty good. You know, you brought up a good point about him being the wonder kid. You know, in the beginning, he got such praise, and now they've hit like this roadblock here and you've either got to take a detour around it or you're just going to keep hitting the same dead end. At some point, they've got to move the needle and get over this hump. I'm not saying that another coach necessarily would be able to do that, but I think for Brad, this type of roster, one, Gordon Hayward, in terms of his role, is not going to give Brad Stevens lip, because Brad Stevens made Gordon Hayward into an NBA player in the get-go at Butler. So you're not going to have that contentious dynamic there. At least I certainly don't foresee that. Then with Tatum and Brown, they're young guys that are stars, that are established. You know, you're not going to have that dynamic there. It's different when you have older veterans, or even guys that are in their prime that are veterans, and they see things differently. You know, closer here to me in Brooklyn, was Kenny Atkinson a bad coach getting a Kyrie-less Brooklyn Nets team while he was out to near 500? I don't think so. What did you want him to do with that team? You know, and they talk about the culture and things like that. Well, when Jared Dudley, Ed Davis, and Damari Carroll were there, and D'Angelo Russell was there, the culture was fine. Now, you bring in totally different guys that have won superstars in this league, and Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, and, you know, there's some talk about, well, you know, we got to do things a certain way to reach that championship level. So all of a sudden now the culture is, you know, not viewed as highly as it was. So what dictates that? The players. So now with Boston and looking at Brad, I think he's fine going forward. I think he is a really good coach. You know, whether he's top five or wherever you want to rank him, you know, that's a debate for another day. But I think they've got the pieces. They've just got to fortify some things. And you touched on Brad Wanamaker. Looking at the Celtics this offseason, financially, they've got some decisions. We've touched on Gordon Hayward's player option. Daniel Tice, I believe he has a non-guaranteed deal for next season of $5 million. I expect them to certainly pick that up. That is not bad at all for a starting caliber center, much less a guy that, you know, would be coming off the bench at a high level. It's great value there. Enes Kanter has a $5 million player option for next season. Guy whose minutes fluctuated, but I don't know financially if he's going to get more than that. Then again, his agent, Mark Bartlestein of Priority Sports, has always found a way to get his guys paid relatively well. So I think that's an interesting dynamic. Wanamaker, I expect them to give him a qualifying offer. He was great, like you mentioned, in his role as a backup point guard and a winning basketball player. When you look at some of those guys that I talked about, Tice, Kanter, Wanamaker, and also Semi Ojeleye has a team option as well. What do you foresee for some of those guys looking ahead?
Yeah, I think, I mean, the first dominoes to fall obviously will be Hayward's player option and Kanter's player option. I think Kanter, I mean, I'm not sure he'd get any more money on the open market. He could look somewhere else, somewhere where he could get more minutes, maybe where Robert Williams and Grant Williams, two young guys, aren't, you know, on his heels looking to take minutes. Even if he opts in, the Celtics could use his deal as salary in a trade. I think the obvious move by Danny Ainge would be to try to package those three picks together to try to get some veteran help for the bench. I think that stood out as one of the obvious weaknesses. And I know the Celtics want to learn more about what they have in Robert Williams, Grant Williams, and Romeo Langford, which is fine. And depending on how much they believe in those guys, like they will want to clear a path for at least some playing time for those guys. But I think it's time to build a more established bench and a bench of guys who know how to win and can make shots and can give Tatum, Brown, Kemba Walker, whoever else is in that core, the appropriate help that they need. Because that was the biggest issue to me, is that they had too many times on the court where their supporting cast just wasn't helpful. And they had a bunch of defensive-minded guys in that second unit, guys that, you know, Semi Ojeleye, Grant Williams, guys who can guard, but none of those guys were threats. And so I think they should look for bench upgrades. They should look for a shooting small forward. They didn't have a pick and pop big in like none of their bigs. Tice shot a little tiny bit, but other than that, they didn't have a pick and pop center, which has obviously become a pretty normal thing in the NBA. And then like they will have the taxpayer mid-level exception in all likelihood. Who can they get on that? Can they get a center with size and defensive fortitude? Obviously, you know, they had a lot of trouble with Bam Adebayo. And as good as Tice was this season, he's still a slender 6'8". And sometimes it matters that you're not as athletic, not as strong as the dude you're playing against. And I think that that could have mattered if they had played Giannis in the finals, I think, or in the Eastern Conference finals. I think that could matter again next year if they run into Giannis. It could matter more next year if they run into Joel Embiid, and Doc Rivers has figured out some things in Philadelphia. So I think that's something they should need to address. I think for the most part, they should be pretty content with their nucleus. If they decide to keep Hayward around, and if Hayward decides to stay around, then their nucleus is really, really good. And that's a group that plays both ways. But surrounding those guys with the right pieces this summer, and or this summer, it's not even the summer anymore. It's so weird that the off season is now in the fall and winter.
Yeah, it's like Merry Christmas. We got a free agent, or Happy Thanksgiving. Like, excuse me.
I'm still getting used to these changes. But yeah, this off season, I think their priority should be upgrading the supporting cast, and obviously, like, now you're building around Tatum, you're building around Brown, you're building around Kemba Walker, and Marcus Smart and Gordon Hayward. Like, that's their core, and that's a really good core, but it's also a core of five guys who can't really play together all at the same time, or at least can't play together much all at the same time. And so that's a problem. You wonder if they'd want to shift around the roster. I mean, in a perfect scenario, your five best players would be able to be on the court all at the same time. That's just a quirk about their roster. But yeah, so, I mean, you wonder if they could go after a big man. You wonder who that would be, and if it would help, because obviously in the NBA right now, versatility is key. Wings are gold, and a lot of teams have leaned into that, including the Celtics, to great success. But they need to take that next step, and this, I mean, every summer is important, but I think for them, now that they are comfortable with their core and should have this core in Tatum, Brown, Walker, Smart, at least for a long time, like, you got to put the right pieces around them.
Yeah, and I mean, when you think about shot blocking big men on the market that could be had maybe for a reduced price, Nerlens Noel, a Willie Cauley-Stein, but, you know, how much, JaVale McGee, maybe, how much of a difference does that make compared to some of the younger guys? You know, Robin Lopez is going to have a player option in Milwaukee. You have to see what he does. You've got other guys like Alex Len, just given the fact that maybe even a Bismack Biyombo, depending on what he's willing to take. It just depends on what they could do with that mid-level exception that they have. Yeah. For the tongue twister there. But yeah, you know, there's certainly a bevy of options that they can have, but I agree with you. I think certainly Danny Ainge is going to work the phones on the trade market. You've got Memphis's back end lottery pick. They've got their own first round pick, and you've got Milwaukee's at the back end of the first round. You could try to package all three of them. I just don't know how much that moves the needle. I think Gordon Hayward's salary and Enes Kanter's salary, you know, you combine those and you're really in a prime position to make some moves. That I think is going to be the most interesting thing for Danny Ainge to figure out. And by the way, another guy we didn't really touch a ton on, Marcus Smart. What a winning basketball player that guy is, in my opinion. Does all the dirty work. And I think in a way that if they got rid of Gordon Hayward and they made a trade or some kind and tried to balance out the roster a little bit better, Marcus Smart is your fourth top guy. I don't think that's a bad thing either. He brings a lot of grit and toughness on the defensive end as a all defensive team guy, and he certainly shot the ball better from my vantage point in the playoffs. It'll be interesting to see, but I think you hit it on the head. You know, Gordon Hayward really going to be an X factor for them in those draft picks. I think there's no doubt in my mind that Ainge is going to work the phones on the trade front, and that's his best way of improving the team. Yeah, you could spread that taxpayer mid-level exception, but you're pretty thin in that regard in doing that, and they got to make some of their own decisions. You know, Jay, it's always a pleasure chatting with you in the media room, and this podcast was no different as well. You can keep up with Jay on Twitter at @byjking. And if you want to hear more episodes of the Hoops High podcast, you can like and subscribe to it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. You can keep up with my tweets on Twitter at Mike A. Scotto. Till next time, I'm your host, Michael Scotto, wishing you and yours all the best.